You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And what weather have we been having of late? No, it is not biblical. It's been sunny. It hasn't been cold at night. In fact, everyone's blaming it from climate change to El Niño to La Niña to everything having shifted. Who knows? But it's been sunny. It's been bright. And all day, the skies have not bruised at midday to then, you know, cloud over and shower us and soak us to the skin. And I can recall my first 4 years here always having wet socks in the middle of the afternoon, being out on assignment. Anyway, so the weather is sunny and it's hot. So for those of you out there pounding the streets, please put on that sunscreen, because the UV beams up here are particularly strong. We don't want any more cases of skin cancer out there. So there's a little warning for those of you out there coming to Bogota. It has not been, I wouldn't say hot, because it's not hot like the Caribbean coast. It's not humid like the Caribbean coast, but it is certainly bright, and it's high altitude, bright sunshine. What else has been going on? Well, the scandal surrounding Álvaro Uribe's former buddies continues to roll on. We've now seen the ex-director of the DAS jailed, and someone else has been jailed, and so, you know, things have started to start, you know, things are unraveling, perhaps, for the former president. We'll see if this guy ever gets any to pay any prison time or not, but that remains to be seen. I had a pretty, as they say, una semana movida, a pretty busy week last week, because I had the Anato Tourism Fair here in Bogota. 29 speed dating meetings. They're not speed dates, of course, but we had Pro Colombia, the new Pro Export, sets up this business meeting with foreign travel agencies, and we get 20 minutes to talk with those of our choice. And so I had 29 of those over 2 days, and of course, being so, let's see, very direct and so in the zone tired me out completely. And then, of course, Saturday I finished off our prenatal classes, so that's very exciting. We're right into the final stretch now, probably 1 month away from having our little boy. So, without further ado, what else can we say, really, about Colombia? Well, I've got some pretty sickening news, and unless, of course, you like his singing. March 22nd, James Blunt, the crooner, kind of whiny crooner from England, who actually I went to school with alongside Benedict Cumberbatch, in fact. James Blunt will be here playing a concert on the 22nd of March, if that's of interest to any of you. I don't really know where he's playing, because I don't care, but his new album apparently is called Moon Landing. Expect it to be sappy and trying to draw on the strength of his hit in 2005, You're Beautiful. I mean, that's about it, really, isn't it? Could we call him a one-hit wonder? I wonder. I don't know. Not my scene. I'd much rather see the Ramones, but rest in peace. They're not around anymore. So that's about it. What else can I say quickly before we go into this next segment? The interview with Karen. I can't even pronounce her surname, but we're going to be speaking to Karen, who's one half of a pair, Karen and Kuhn, who are of Land Cruising Adventures. This, now, recording this interview with them I felt like I wanted to sell up everything, you know, dip into my savings, buy a 4x4 and travel the world. But of course, like I said, and like I will say to you now, my adventure would pale in comparison to theirs, because they left Holland in 12 years ago and they moved east, and that took them through Pakistan and Iran and various other places around there before shipping down, and now they're in South America. Colombia's amongst the last places they'll be visiting, and I got Karen to come and talk to me in a coffee shop in Uptown Bogota just before she and Kuhn set off along the Llanos Highway all the way out to Puerto Carreño, right on the border with Venezuela. I mean, how amazing is that? This is just one of those unknown parts of Colombia, one of which I dream to visit one day, but maybe in a 4x4, or maybe I'll fly. We'll see how that works out for me in this period of time. Certainly not in the coming months, because we'll have a new arrival by the end of March or mid-April, I believe. Anyway, that's what the doctors are saying. We'll see. So what about it? I've also been thinking about the future of Columbia Calling, so I'm not sure where this show's going quite yet. I'm not sure how we're going to pan out. We're into 87 episodes, something like that, since I started. But I'd like to hear some feedback from those of you out there who listen to us, you know, frequently. Not religiously, but frequently. What do you think about this show? How do you think that we should continue building on this? Or, you know, if you think it's awful and you want me to, you know, shut up, just let me know. You can get through to me at columbiacalling@gmail.com. And, of course, through our website, columbiacallingradio.com. I'm on Twitter at Columbia Calling. But don't go away, because we'll be talking all about 4x4s and land cruising through South America and across the world with Karen, who's one half of the pair, Karen and Coon, of Land Cruising Adventures. I'm Richard McCall, and this is Columbia Calling. Please stay tuned.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here in Bogota, Colombia, with Karen Viss. Karen Viss is a traveler by nature. In fact, it's her lifestyle, because with her husband, Koen, this Dutch couple have been traveling around the world for roughly 12 years. They've been everywhere, Iran, Pakistan. They're now here in Colombia, and I've leapt at the chance to be able to talk to them. If there's background noise, it's because we're in a little cafe trying out some gourmet Colombian coffee. Where else should we be when we're talking to a traveler of this nature? Karen, welcome on the show.
Thank you, Richard.
Listen, Karen, now 12 years around the world. How do you do it? How do you and Koen stay a couple? Because I traveled for almost 8 months with a girlfriend in the United States in a car, and that was too close for comfort. I mean, you know, as soon as we finished that, we both got on separate planes back to the UK and almost never spoke to one another. So let us in a little bit into your secret.
Well, I'm not sure what the secret is. Maybe what's interesting to say is that Koen and I only knew each other a little over a year before we left on this journey. We lived 200 kilometers apart in the Netherlands, so we saw each other only in the weekend. So we never lived together before setting out on this journey. So the start of our relationship living together was in a car, 90 square feet or something like that. So I think that may help, because you don't have expectations from how you used to live together before. And when we traveled from the Netherlands to Greece, Turkey, Iran, it just sort of manifested itself very easily that we have very much a division of tasks. So Koen is the driver, he's the mechanic, he's responsible pretty much for the outside of the car. A lot of the paperwork he does, because he has much more patience than I, whereas I'm more responsible for the inside of the car. So, for example, which people find very funny, I give him clean clothes, I give him the towel to shower. If he wants something from the inside of the car, I will get it, because he makes a mess and I want to keep it organized. I do the laundry, I do the groceries. The only thing we share in that respect is like cooking. Okay. Sometimes he cooks, sometimes I cook. And there's this very interesting way of looking at it, that you can say, okay, this is your business and this is my business. So if I start about mechanics, he will say, that's not your business, you don't have to worry about it, do your own thing. And when he starts about, do we have enough bread, I will say, Koen, that's not your department, I take care of that. And in that respect, we travel together, we love being together 24 hours, we share the sightseeing, we share the driving, we share meeting people. But at times, this is how we sort of have our own personal space, so to speak.
It's fascinating. I don't want to say that you're the housekeeper, because you share cooking, so it's good.
I am the housekeeper, and that's just fine. In the Netherlands, that would have been totally different. But we have the most traditional division of roles. But for us, it just works. It worked for both of us, so yeah, why make an issue of it?
Okay, perfect. And when you left the Netherlands 12 years ago, where were you? I guess you went east. You went east. You went east through all of those countries along there. We chatted beforehand, before this interview, just to find out a little bit about one another and so on and so forth. We're both writers. We write for some similar publications and others not so. But you write, I mean, how you sustain life is that you write articles for magazines about your experiences.
Yes, we do. When we left the Netherlands, we sold everything. We had no idea how long we were going to be on the road. We didn't know if we were going to stay together. We didn't know each other that long. So the first 3 years, we just lived on our savings. And we decided to go to Asia for the simple reason that it would be cheap, that would be culturally very interesting. It didn't demand any shipping of the vehicle. So it was kind of an easy start, even though we started in, to Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, which are not necessarily the easiest country. And after 3 years, we really enjoyed what we were doing, and we thought, okay, we want to make this our lifestyle. But then some money needs to be coming in. And right around that time, a Dutch car 4x4 magazine asked us for a story with photos. So we tried, and it worked out, and that somehow got it started, really. Kun already was a photographer. He was a graphic designer. I did my own writing of my website diary kind of style. But more car magazines followed, 4x4 magazines followed worldwide. So either I write in Dutch or in English. And if it's for a German or Polish or Japanese magazine, the editor will translate to their language. And then a couple of years ago, I wanted to do something else as well. So we're now also a bit more into travel writing for online travel magazines and food magazines as well.
So we can see all of your work on your website, though. You put all the links up there on landcruisingadventure.com.
Yes.
So we can. So if there's anyone out there thinking of doing what you're doing, or just a small percentage of what you've done in 12 years, they can check out tips and pointers and advice from you guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on our website. And otherwise, there's a contact page. You can always ask us questions. There are a lot of people traveling nowadays by car from, say, between Alaska and Ushuaia. It's a very common route nowadays. It's a beautiful drive, but we are very much ambassadors to get off that Pan American Highway, because South America is so much more than that. And countries like Brazil and the Guyana shouldn't be forgotten on this journey.
No, it's true. I mean, obviously the Guyanas are sort of overlooked because they feel more Caribbean, let's say, because they're on that top shoulder of South America. I've been there, and it's fun, and so on. But I know what you're talking about. So, give me a background now. How long have you been in South America?
8 years. So we traveled for 3.5 years from the Netherlands to Vietnam, you could say, along the southern edge of Asia, which is pretty much Iran, Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, the subcontinent, and then Southeast Asia, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Malaysia, that corner.
Fantastic, isn't
it? From there, it's easy to ship with containers. So we shipped to Buenos Aires. And there we started our South American adventure, thinking it would take years, 2 years. And we're now, we've been on the road here for 8 years, and we'll think we need another year.
Now, I've got an anecdote about the Ushuaia, Alaska route. And we get people coming through Mompos on bicycles doing that, over 2 years. And, they don't have a gram of fat on them.
Yep.
They're amazing. I say, can I give you a beer? Because I just in this heat and this dust, they're like, no, glass of water would be great. And we'll anyway, so we had a bunch come through and stay. And then there was a break of a couple of weeks. And I remember this French couple turned up, and they didn't look athletic. They're on their bicycles. They were a little bit overweight and everything, and they were sweaty, and they were husband and wife. They'd clearly just had an argument. I mean, they clearly somewhere along the road to Mompos had an argument. Anyway, my wife receives them at the door and says, oh, we've had quite a few of you guys coming through recently. And the wife looks at the husband and says, you see, I told you, everyone's doing it.
Well, it's true. There's so many on the road, and there are many like us traveling in a vehicle. Or in a car, but there are many people on motorcycles and a lot of bicyclists. And I have to say, I have the utmost respect for bicyclists. Going through the Andes all the way down to Ushuaia, to Patagonia, with all that wind, utmost respect. And it's interesting because you see solo travelers, you see couples, but you see families with kids on bicycles. We've met a Dutch couple with two kids who started in Los Angeles on tandems. So one parent, one kid on one tandem. And by the time they got here, the kids were of age that they said, okay, parents, you go on one tandem now, and we want our own tandem. We're now 14, 15. We can take care of ourselves.
It is amazing. And we do get the big camper vans. I think the French like those more than anything, the big camper van and everything. But give us a little bit of a description of your vehicle. I know that people will be able to see it on the website and everything. It is your baby. But just tell us here, for the sake of radio, what car it is that you have and how it's dealt with all of this travel.
Well, for the people who have knowledge of cars, it's an old Land Cruiser BJ45 from 1984. So it's the last in that series. The big advantage of this car, you see a lot of the BG40s driving around in Colombia, which is the shorter version of this Toyota Land Cruiser. And we have the long version, which makes it more comfortable to sleep in the back. The big advantage of this car is that it's all mechanic. So we have no electronic roll-up windows that break down and can't be fixed anywhere. So it's pretty much taking a car apart and you can actually fix it, which is what we're doing right now in Bogota.
So you've been a couple of weeks outside of Bogota in this sort of workshop. So you're here with me having a coffee in the lovely Asahar coffee house near the Parque 93 in the high rent district. And Kuhn is up there on his hands and knees in the dirt, fixing the vehicle.
He is. And I can't tell you what he's doing because I don't know the English words of all that. But the front wheels are off and everything underneath is out and it's full of grease and oil. But he likes doing that. I mean, some people don't. They will just bring a car to workshop and it gets fixed for them. But Kuhn, yeah, he has become a mechanic in 12 years.
Well, it's a necessary job to do. I mean, when you're doing that. No, it's absolutely fascinating that you should be doing this and for 12 years. I guess your next route, you were saying you're going to go from here down through the Llanos, so these lowland savannas of Colombia, to cross into Venezuela. And then you've got a break back in Holland for a while. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. Every year we go for 3 or 4 weeks. To the Netherlands to visit family because, beautiful as this way of life is, I do miss my family and I want to spend time with them. So that's one requirement more from my side than Kuhn's side to go to the Netherlands once a year. So we do that in May. We leave the car somewhere. We just fly home.
It's fantastic. What a liberty of lifestyle. But you do find that the work that you do does cover the costs that you need. And also, I mean, I was going to ask you about family, but you've sort of answered the question. But what do they think of your lifestyle, your family's back there in Holland?
Well, on one hand, they're very proud of what we're doing. On the other hand, I think it's hard to imagine for anybody who's never done anything like that to really understand what we're doing. Some will continuously say, but you're always on holiday, which we're not. We basically we don't live like other people, but we do live like we need to eat and we need to sleep and we need to work. We just do it at different places instead of from one place, right? So it's very, some people have come and visited us, friends and family, so they got a bit of a feeling what we're doing. But I think it's very hard to really understand our way of life.
Well, it would be impossible unless you've really done it. I mean, yeah. That's the thing. I can't actually picture it. Mine was only a few months in a car and camping and everything. And I knew that there was an end to it. Thank God. But I would have been fine alone. I would have been fine probably with someone else, but with my partner at that time was not appropriate. Listen, we're talking to Karen Viss, who's one part of a two-part team, her and her partner Kuhn, who drive around landcruisingadventure.com. You can see all about their adventures. And it is just absolutely fantastic to hear about someone living this kind of lifestyle, something very different. We haven't had a travel person on this show for a long time, but I like what what you said there. You know, you have to work, you have to eat. And I think that's what a lot of people think when, you know, I've been out of England for 16 odd years now. And my friends still think I live on a beach in a hammock sipping cocktails out of a coconut. You know, I think the truth is I need to work. I mean, that's it, isn't it? We have to survive. But I'm sitting here with Karen and we're taking a short break. I mean, this is a break really, isn't it? We're just chatting to one another. We're having a nice coffee. But here she is. She is walking publicity for her lifestyle. She's got a 4x4 magazine shirt on and everything, and she's apologized for being sunburnt from off-roading in Guatavita the weekend previous and stuff. So it's very exciting to have someone who's so hands-on here with us on the show. Now,
well, let's say something more about this working and traveling, because when I talk about overlanding, and that's pretty much people traveling, say, minimal 6 months in their own vehicle. And a lot of them work. Well, you have different groups. You have groups that say, solo travelers or couples, we want to do this for 1 year or 2 years. So they generally save up that money. I mean, if you live in a Western country like the United States or Europe, that's very doable. But others like us want to do it long term. And it's fascinating to see the ways people make their living. A lot of people dream of selling their articles and photography like we do. It's like the ultimate dream. It's not for everybody. But to give some examples, we have one friend who is a translator of books. You can do that anywhere nowadays. You don't need an office. We have a friend who has a business in the United States, and he can just manage it online and just flies to the United States 3 times a year, I don't know, to talk to his people. But you can do so much online nowadays. Other people don't have the skills to work online, but they're very practical. Be a carpenter. You can work anywhere. So they work for 3 months somewhere along the way and then move on for another 6 months. And so the argument, I can't travel because I need money, no argument.
It's kind of redundant now. We're going to take a short break. This is Columbia Calling. We're going to come back with Karen Vias and talk a little bit more about landcruisingadventure.com and her life with her partner on the road, and about Columbia. I think that's what we need to talk about now, but it's really interesting to have heard about the lifestyle. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Karen just after these messages. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota at the Asaha Coffee House here in Bogota in the high rent district near the Parque 93. And we're talking to Karen Vias, she's a Dutch lady who's been traveling for 12 years with her partner Koen around the world. And we've talked a little bit about their route. And we've talked about the lifestyle and the demands of the lifestyle and how they make it work. But now we're going to delve into a little bit about their time here in Colombia. Before I quickly jump into that, do check out their website. That's landcruisingadventure.com. But now, Karen, Colombia, how long have you been in here? How long have you been in Colombia?
About 4 months.
So it's not really very much time, but you're going to go out to Venezuela, but you will come back into Colombia later.
Yeah, one of the big problems when traveling. You're always limited with visa, right? So in Colombia, we are allowed, I think, to stay 6 months, which is just not enough for the country, really. We've been here now for 4 months, and we've only seen the south from the Ecuadorian border up to Bogota. Anything north from here, we don't know yet. So we'll need another 4 months, right?
Another 4 months at least. Now, listen, I know that you've done some pretty interesting travels that I haven't even done. I've been to Quibdó, but I flew in. So you've driven the road from Medellin into Quibdó, or was it from Pereira into Quibdó?
Well, it's a loop. So from Medellin down to Ciudad de Bolívar and then to Quibdó, which is now partly asphalted, they're working on it, and part of it is still just a forest trail, really. You cannot even call it an unpaved road. That would be an overstatement. And then from Quibdó, you loop back to Pereira, which is another road that they are paving, so which is partly unpaved, a lot of potholes, and partly perfect surface. Yeah.
Now, because I find this very interesting, because the only things I've ever heard about this are negative. You know, guerrillas, bandits, potholes, landslides. But you guys have done it. Now, let's put paid to some of those rumors. How did you find it?
Well, we enjoyed it. Of course, we heard all the same stories about Quibdó. And Colombia, in that respect, is a bit different than other South American countries. You do have to ask around more about safety issues. that's reality. So that's what we did. And fortunately, in those 4 months, we've gotten a lot of contacts in Colombia. So we asked around, but it's hard to find reliable information. You know, it's very easy when you live in Bogota, sitting behind your desk, to say it's not safe, based on what you read in the newspapers. To find people who've actually been to Quibdó, well, it was quite hard, but we managed to do that. And, you know, one of the comments we got from a friend, he said, okay, if you are afraid of guerrilla, don't go. Because if you're afraid anywhere traveling, not necessarily in Colombia, I don't know, somehow you attract problems. I don't know how that works, but I believe that's true. But us, with our old rusted vehicle, without air conditioning, it's always the windows down, and open to meet new people, and we really don't care what background people have. You don't have to worry about it. So we took that advice. That's what we like to hear, I will admit. It's very selective. And we drove down, and to give an impression, it's a very long day drive from Ciudad de Bolívar to Quibdó. We got 2 flat tires. We have only 1 spare, so we needed to fix 1 tire, which took like 1 hour, 2 hours. The first person was a local farmer who walked up to us and asked if he could help. The second was a motorcycle stopping if he could help. The third was a truck when we were inflating that tire with a small air compression thing, which takes hours. And the truck driver took out his equipment and inflated the tires in a couple of minutes. So, well, that's been our experience with the so-called all bad and scary people on the road. We've met a group of soldiers who might have been guerrilla. We don't really know whether the story about the rubber boots or the, I don't know what you call these other shoes that militaries have, are true. But, you know, they were just there, didn't bother us. And so we felt totally safe. And then you get into this totally different Colombian region, African Colombian region, totally different atmosphere. And it was just a lot of fun. I mean, I wish, even we, it's hard to believe, but we have limitations on our time schedules, so we couldn't have stayed as long as we wanted to, but it would have been nice if we could have stayed like 2-3 days just in Quibdó to get to know the city a bit more.
Quibdó is an interesting place. Let me just put it into context for those of you out there who may not know. It's the capital of the department of Chocó, which is one of the most biodiverse places on Earth in terms, and one of the wettest places on Earth as well. It is a truly overlooked region of Colombia. It's always been sort of marginalized, I think partially due to the Afro nature of it. It's very easy for Bogota in its bubble up here just to think, well, you know, that place off there, you know, the savages who live out there. And that road, they've promised it for decades. I mean, decades upon decades. The Medellin, let's say, Ciudad Bolívar, Quibdó road has been one of the great challenges for every government since whenever, you know, to actually open up the Pacific coast. And then they say that they're not going to do it because they don't want access for the guerrillas and for drugs. And they say that they do want to do it because it will open for communication and allow life to change and so on. But it's a, you know, whenever you talk to people about, and people who don't know, because that's largely most people, about doing that, no, you can't go by bus. No, there's a strike. No, the guerrillas are doing the pesca milagrosa. No, there's... But it sounds to me like you did pass some guerrillas, because if they were in the rubber boots and not in the combat boots, those are guerrillas. That's the routine, uniform for the guerrillas. But they didn't even stop you.
No. They were just standing there. And we may have met more of them in the south of Colombia. I really don't know. I mean, because, you know, we're very new to Colombia. We don't know these details. And the way we deal with it is just being very open-minded. Guerrilla or not, I'm not justifying anything what they stand for. But in the end, they are people. They want to provide for their families. They no doubt have a rough life in their own way. And in the end, they're human beings. So, and that's the part I think that we are looking for. We'll leave it to other media to talk about the problems and that Colombia has. We like to focus on the good experiences and the meeting people. We receive a lot of hospitality in Colombia. A lot of people have been very helpful in many different ways. So, of course, what we see is just as selective as the mainstream media that focus on all the problems, but at least it puts another perspective on Colombia. And I think that, you know, that's important to see as well. I'm the last to say that Colombia is safe in every respect to live here or travel here. We do have to be more careful. But having said that, having traveled to Quibdó and Putumayo, well, we can become ambassadors of Colombia as well. Huh?
But this is what it's all about. We do like ambassadors for Colombia out there. And of course, you're talking to everyone because you're on the road and you're stopping in towns. So tell us about your trip to Putumayo, because that's another place I don't know. I mean, I'm actually a little bit jealous. Come on, tell me about Putumayo.
Well, we were in the Amazon region of Ecuador, and it just didn't make sense to retrace our route to the Panam and take the main border crossing. So we wanted to take the San Miguel smaller border crossing. And from the Overleten community, we got a lot of comments that we shouldn't go, that it was dangerous and Putumayo is full of guerrillas. Unfortunately, most people haven't been there. So, you know, people tend to copy each other's stories, especially the bad ones. That's something we've really learned in our journey. So that's just not good enough for us. So we started asking around. We were in Coca and we were in Lago Agrio, which is sort of, you know, the gateway to the Amazon, but from there makes sense to go to San Miguel. And we were invited to stay with a family who had lived in, who are Colombians, who came from the region Putumayo between the border and Mocoa, which was the road we wanted to drive. And they were still going back on a regular basis to visit family. So that's about reliable as it can get, right? So we took out the map. They showed us where to go, where not to go, because it's true, there are problem areas in Putumayo. But they said if you stay on the main road to Mocoa, you'll be fine. So that's what we did. We also had a contact in Mocoa itself who confirmed that story. And so we decided to go. And it was different. I mean, it was our first meeting with Colombia, and there were all these soldiers, and there were tanks on the road, and they had blown up an oil pipe, so we had to wait for 2 hours. And it is strange, you know, to see these military tanks and bunkers that totally, and you could see the damage of the oil spills. So it's far from a very, I don't know, booming area. But we felt safe, and when we asked for directions, people were nice. We weren't stopped by any unfriendly people in any way. So for us, it was a good experience, to which I would like to add, this was in November. Things change, so if you want to travel there, you should do your own investigation. But I think the most important thing is ask people who've actually been there.
Of course, and up-to-date information. One day it can be open, another day it can be closed. But your experience was completely positive. And so then did you continue on from Mocoa on the, was it called the Trampoline of Death? Is that the road?
Yeah, no, we did not go that way. That's more west to Pasto. So we went farther north to San Agustin, which is, I think, gives a good other side of the story. We drove from Popayan via the Pan-American to Cali, with the idea that we would go back south to Tierra Dentro, the archaeological site, via the interior road. And already somebody in Cali said, you are crazy. You shouldn't be driving that road. And we were like, sure, why not, you know. And so we were driving into the interior from Cali a bit southeast. And suddenly there's this, I don't know, suddenly it happens. You drive there and you're like, I don't know if we should be here. And I can totally not pinpoint why. Nobody was unkind. We didn't see any weapons, anything. But there's something in the air. And that's something you learn as a traveler, to trust your gut. And so I thought, no, we didn't really investigate this route. That was not a good idea. And right at that moment, a motorcyclist drives along Kunz, the driver's seat, and asks where we are going. And we're like, why do you want to know? Because we know from Vietnam, it's often people who want to sell hotels or restaurants. And he says, no, but I'm really soy preocupado. I'm preoccupied. Where are you going? I don't think you should be here. And it sort of confirmed my feeling that was already building up, like maybe we shouldn't be here. And so Kun asked, is there a police station here? And he said, yes, it's just around the corner. So we checked that out, which was totally like closed off, that you can drive in front of the police station. So we thanked the motorcyclist because he was really meaning well. That's what I mean. People take care of you. And so we checked with the police, who then said, well, You can drive to Tierra Dentro, but you're going through an area which is full of marijuana plantations. We can escort you to the next village, no problem, and from every village you can get another escort if that's what you want. But maybe right now it's not a good idea. They just killed two indigenous people. This was in November. So it's a bit rough right now and unpredictable. And so, you know, and because we already, and fortunately we both have this gut feeling that, that is on the same level, we said, okay, we're not going to do it. We like adventure. We like off-roading, but we're not, we don't enjoy playing with our lives. And so they escorted us back to the Pan American. Very nice, very, you know. So it's a good way to show the other side of the story. It's not that we do everything and take whatever risk because one person says it's safe to go there. There's this gut feeling, and that's in the end what decides for us, go or not go.
Of really interesting that you just need sort of an ambience, you know, you just knew with so many years traveling, you just knew that it wasn't right. So that's, if this was November, then that was the very, you know, very well reported killing of two indigenous people that were both by the FARC.
Yes.
That killed the two indigenous people.
Yeah, that was in that particular area.
So you were near to Toribio and all of those places, was that? Well, I can't even remember where, but it was a dreadful time actually just down there. So yes, you did well to get out of there because they were blocking the roads and everything. So
it becomes very unpredictable, and you're then actually in the hands of people who can do whatever they want. And sometimes, you know, like Putumayo, we felt it's good to go there. It's a main road. There are a lot of soldiers. And in this particular area, at that particular time, there were too many things going on. And yeah.
See, yes, as you said, adventure, but not stupidity.
No, exactly.
And that's why, I wrote a blog years ago, I think, a couple of years ago now, some travelers to Colombia are playing stupid, and some are. Some will do these big risks. And that's been about the most commented blog I've ever had on richardmccall.com. The rabid responses about you can't judge someone's way of traveling, you can't do this. But hang on a second. If you are deliberately putting yourself at risk, when your gut feeling is saying, don't do it, you're no longer being an adventurer. You're being stupid. You know, that's what I say. That's fascinating stuff. I mean, really, truly fascinating. So, hang on. You wanna jump in?
Well, because it is an important topic. And what I'd like to add is in those 12 years, we've always been safe and not really have had any problems. You know, we were 3 months in Iran, 6 months in Pakistan, which was 10 years ago. So I don't know how the situation is today. But the only time we got robbed from a camera and a wallet was in El Salvador, the Bahia, in Brazil. Now, we've been 2 years in Brazil. We love it. We're ambassadors of Brazil. And we'd go back to El Salvador, the Bahia, despite we were threatened with a big knife. The only reason we really believe that that happened is because then we didn't trust that gut. No, it was not that we didn't trust the gut feeling. We didn't listen to it. We had been arguing. We were tired. A lot of things had been going on for a number of reasons. And we were driving to a museum, and the guard told us we couldn't park there. We had to park somewhere else. And it was, we felt it wasn't safe, but we were so tired and sick of everything and each other and whatever sometimes goes wrong in a journey, right? So we were like, okay, we'll just park. And we got back, and there was this guy waiting for us with a big knife. And so this happened, you know, this happens in a flash. And we got into the car, and we just said, okay, got that done with. Let's move on. And the interesting thing is that for us, it was like a break. We finally got talking about what was really important. But it was also a great lesson that to stop when you're tired, that you take a day of rest if you're tired or sick, because you cannot judge properly what the situation is. I mean, it was such a huge lesson, and that's how we see it then. Okay, that was a good reminder, because we're going to Northeast Brazil, which does have its problem areas as well. And yeah, that's how we look at it. Yeah.
Really interesting. So, and that served as like a, you know, it was not only a reminder, but it was like a, you know, a shot in the arm for your relationship, because of course,
absolutely a wake up call. Yeah.
Now, 10 years ago, you were in Iran and Pakistan, And I guess, you know, you've been, let's say, 12 years on the road. I guess you start to compare places all the time, you know, how the security here, how the security there, how the culture or the reactions to you. Has Colombia reminded you of any places along the way?
Well, first of all, we try not to do that. And I think it helps that we stay for a long period in one country and that we don't plan. We don't have any future plans. We don't know when we will retire or where, you know, apart from Venezuela, what we will do after that. We are very much now in Colombia, and we really dig into Colombia right now. We don't know anything, but know very little about Venezuela. We'll figure that out when we get there. But if you talk about, sure, of course you have reminders, right? And for us, what's been very interesting is to compare Iran and Colombia in that respect, in the sense that both have a very bad image, at least in the Western world, for totally different reasons. But when you tell people, I'm going there, either to Iran or Colombia, the first thing people will tell you, don't go, it's too dangerous. People will kill you, there will be murderers on every corner of the street. And the interesting thing is that both countries do have its problems, no denying there. But if you talk to travelers who've actually been to the countries, 99% love it. They become ambassadors of those countries. A lot of hospitality, helpful people, friendly people. So in that respect, yeah, it's been very interesting to, over the past 8 years that we were in South America, to hear these stories about Colombia that really made us want to go there.
And give me another thing. So will you be writing, have you got some articles published now about Colombia out there, or some coming up in the future that we can see?
We wrote a couple of blog posts that you can find on our website, landcruisingadventure.com, which talks about the Putumayo story for sure. And I'm writing right now one about the Quibdó story, so that will be published soon. But there are many more stories to come, for sure.
All right. And they are all in English, or there are some in Dutch, and there are some all in English?
All in English.
Excellent. So listen, for those of you out there, inspired or just, you know, an armchair traveler, you can read these pieces on landcruising.com, because all the links will be put up there and everything. But you have a Facebook page as well, a fan page?
Yeah, it's called facebook.com/landcruising.
Okay, so you can follow Karen and Kuhn's journey through there. And so so you're going to go off to Venezuela. You're going to go via Puerto Carreño, which is way out there. Is that Vichada? I can't remember. It's terrible.
1,000 kilometers or something?
1,000 kilometers out there.
Yeah.
And it's proper off-road.
It's proper off-road. The off-road club here in Bogota loves to go in the rainy season. That's not what we are going to do. We hope to get going this weekend or next weekend when it's still dry. And it's the same story. We asked around a lot, and it's become a very popular route for the off-roaders. So, and we've contacts on the Venezuelan side as well. We have people waiting for us there. So we really, really look forward to this journey, because it's one of the places that each Colombian will tell you, have you been to Los Llanos? You should go there. It's the most beautiful place.
No, the Llanos are beautiful, and I hope there's no early rainfall for you when you leave, because it will be an adventure. Now, we've been talking to Karen Viz, who's been gracious with her time here in the coffee shop, Asaha Coffee Shop, to explain to us a little bit about her lifestyle, her and Kuhn's lifestyle, traveling around the world 12 years. I mean, can you imagine 12 years in their little car? Well, little big car. And traveling, you know, amazing places, Iran, Pakistan, and now after 8 years in Latin America and South America, they're in Colombia. They'll soon be going off to Venezuela and then coming back. I expect to see you in Mompox in the future, Karen.
I hope you'll be there then. It would be really nice to catch up again.
Well, you just let me know when you're coming through. But, you know, you give me a good figure. I know that you can arrive later. But if you give me some time, I can get there, because, you know, most of my life now is in Bogota. But maybe next year I'll be spending more time in Mompox with a new arrival and so on and so forth. Please check out Karen's website. That's landcruisingadventure.com. They're on Facebook as well, the same title, Land Cruising Adventure. You know, you can get in touch with them there. If you've got any questions about off-roading and 4x4 around the world, just about anywhere, you can get in touch with them, because in 12 years they're probably the world's leading authority on travel of this nature.
No. There's one couple, a Swiss couple, who've been on the road for 30 years. in the same car. They are in the Guinness Book of Records, World Record Tour.com, I think they're called. So no, I mean, they are actually hopping all the islands in the Pacific. And
okay, well, we'll put you in at number two because I don't know any better. So you're the second most qualified world travelers. So anyway, get in touch with them. I hope you've enjoyed this show. It's been a little bit of a break from the norm. We've been discussing Colombia and the rest of the world. It's been a real pleasure to have Karen Vis on the show. Remember that you can get in touch with us if you want to get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us through Facebook. That's Colombia Calling. Again, through the website, ColombiaCallingRadio.com. And of course, email columbiacalling@gmail.com. Before I sign off, remember that you can get in touch as well with Karen at landcruisingadventure.com. It's been a great show. Karen, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
All right. So this has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And we'll be back, as always, next week with another interesting person on the show. Thank you for listening.